I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello! Welcome back to another archaeogastronomical adventure with me, Thomas Dinas. This is the Delicious Legacy podcast, where on each episode, more or less every week, we explore some hidden and dusty corner of food history. We are in season 4 now, episode 24, so 4 years and plenty of episodes exploring and discovering our food past. Now, on this episode, I want to take you to something a little bit more modern, and something that I haven't really investigated in this podcast. And this is nothing else but the birth of the modern Greek cuisine, together with the birth of the modern Greek nation after the revolution against the Ottoman Empire in 1821. What is Greek food? What is Greek cuisine? And how can we define it as a separate entity from other Mediterranean nations and the Balkans, of course? What gave me the inspiration, as such, to talk about modern Greek cuisine and the birth of it, it was the book of Anya von Bremsen called National Dish, where she explores the world, basically. She goes around the world in search of food, history, and the meaning of home. And basically, that made me think about national cuisines and what it means to have a national cuisine and what are the myths and the real morsels of truth behind each national dish. And from that, basically, I came up with the idea of what we would define now as a national dish of Greece. And I thought moussaka. And why is moussaka a national dish? And from that, this gave birth to all these thoughts and all these definitions I'm trying to find in this episode about modern Greek cuisine and the lineage from ancient Greece, Ottoman, Byzantine, and Roman, and so on, and all the different influences. So I hope you enjoy this one. And yeah, if you have any questions or any things that you need clarifications, or you want to add something to this conversation, please do not hesitate to contact me on Twitter as the Delicious Legacy Podcast, or Blue Sky as Delicious Legacy, or Instagram, or YouTube, or wherever else we can talk. And of course, Patreon, where you can join the community there. And from $3 a month, you can get the podcasts early and ad-free, as well as a plethora of different essays, recipes, and videos, and so on. Every cuisine, every national cuisine, is the privilege of the people who created it. Gastronomy itself, it has a need for words, and also has the need for conversation, for the speech between people and between objects and between different nations. And all this can be amalgamated into something critical and something that gives us further food as such for thought and discussion. On that note, it becomes painfully obvious that there isn't a single definition of a national cuisine or Greek national cuisine as such. And if we try to define it, we imprison it in very narrow boundaries and we exclude elements that add to its richness rather than trying to make it something unique and better than anything else. In many ways, we can say it's a transparent cuisine with clear lines. It can be defined from the simplicity and freshness of the ingredients, and the frugal, austere or thefty nature of it, depending on the situation and the angle we examine the Greek cuisine. Is it just this, though? One can say the same thing for many of the peasant cuisines of the Mediterranean, be it from Provence or from Corsica or Sicily, Sardinia, and so on. The use of fresh fish, the use of olive oil, the use of simple elements isn't exclusive to the Greeks only. The Mediterranean peasant diet and cuisine, to the extent one can call it cuisine, by mainly Anglophone cookery authors in the past 40-50 years, and praised in the north of Europe, out of necessity, mainly comprised of an array of wild greens and other weeds, pulses, a few soups, a little olive oil and wine, and seasonal and local fruit and vegetables. Greece as an agricultural economy and the Greek way of life, which was based on the rhythms of nature and cultivation of the land and growing fruits and vegetables, the Greek cuisine of the masses, until at least the Second World War, was the same. There was, of course, an urban Greek class with more modern, more European influence, but this was a mere minority, mainly based in Athens and some rich areas in some islands, perhaps. Even these places lost this urban, let's say, class that they had after World War II in the modern era. So throughout South Europe, throughout poor agricultural and rural communities, we have the same story, in a sense, the same type of food and cuisine, at least until the few decades after the Second World War. So as much as I want to think of the Greek food as something distinct, I failed to draw a clear line on the kitchen floor of what will separate the Greek food from the others. What I see is more similarities and more things in common rather than a distinct Italian or Greek or Spanish or Cretan or Turkish cuisine. But talking about this, we purposefully forget also other Greek cultures and other Greek important Greek elements who lived outside the mainland Greek, what we define now as mainland Greece, for millennia, such as the Pontic Greeks, Greek Pontic cuisine, and the cuisine of the Greeks from the Aegean coast of Turkey, which, they are rich, they're spicy and sweet and sour. The Pontic Greeks lived in the Turkish Black Sea region, in the coastal towns and cities, for thousands of years, and the Ionian Greeks in what is today the Aegean coast of Turkey. Millennia passed, they kept the language and mostly their Orthodox religion, and they were considered Greeks in a country of predominantly Turkish. Their food, of course, was rich and spicy and sweet and sour and had all the influences of the East, and their desserts full of syrups and nuts. Baklava, kadaifi, revani and others that we've been eating in Greece as part of our culture all have ancestors in the cultures of the East. Persia, Byzantium, Ottomans and so on. Are these Greeks less Greek and their foods less Greek foods? Are these dishes not Lebanese, or Syrian, or Turkish, or Kurdish, and Iranian, and Armenian too? Are they not part of our common heritage we can share happily, rather than trying to remove, as one could say, the eggs of the cake mix, and splitting the ingredients to their past ancestors, with dubious results? Or if we go to the other corner, in the mountainous northwest, where, for example, butter is the main lubricant, and it has been for centuries. Not olive oil. Again, this painful way of trying to define something by saying, okay, olive oil, fresh fish, vegetables. It doesn't mean that it's 100% that only. The influences within the Greek cuisine are multiple. And so we cannot just say Greek and Christian Orthodox as well. Even though over the years after independence, after the War of Independence against the Ottoman Empire, these became the prominent ones. How can we leave out the Greek Muslims, the Arvanites, from Peloponnese, the Pomaks, the North Macedonians, and the Slavs, and the Jews of Ioannina and Thessaloniki. They were all part of this broader Greek society, culture, and food culture. Jewish communities have existed in Greece from the remote antiquity. The Jews of the Byzantine Empire called themselves Romaniotes. So these Romaniote Jews formed the majority of the Jews in Greece until 1492, when thousands of Sephardic Jews fleeing the persecutions of the Spanish Inquisition, as we've heard in previous episodes, arrived in the newly expanded Ottoman Empire. These Sephardic Jews settled in several cities, but mainly in Thessaloniki, the Pearl of the Orient, as this used to be called. They differed from the Romaniote brethren, and by 1613, they constituted 68% of the population of Thessaloniki. The city's lifeblood pulsed to the rhythms of Jewish mores and customs. Up until the beginning of the 20th century, most of the city's commercial life stopped at dusk on Fridays. Ladino, a combination of Spanish, Greek and Turkish, was spoken throughout the city. Unfortunately, most of that community was deported to concentration camps in Poland in 1942 and 1943. Of the 50,000 Jewish inhabitants of Thessaloniki before the war, there were only a few thousand left. Their foods and their cuisine is part of the Greek cuisine and still echoes on the traditions of the city. Again and again, trying to define the Greek food with strict and narrow standards of Greek language, Greek religion, fails to take into account all these different communities who were part of the Greek culture for thousands of years. If we exclude all this, we are making our heritage poorer and trying to define Greek cuisine in very strict terms. Perhaps a better way to see this problem is not what Greek cuisine is, but what we eat in Greece now, and where in Greece we eat that, where we are. This is very important too, the sense of place. Crete and Cretan cuisine is different to Rhodes, to Corfu, to Thessaloniki and Athens, and so on. Of course, if you avoid the classic tourist traps, then yes, you will have different foods, and you go in search of the home cooking of Greek cuisine. So we can safely say that we cannot define Greek cuisine as a separate entity from all the external influences of today as well. For example, we have burgers, we have Italian pizzas and Japanese sushi. They all exist, and they all been cooked in Greece by Greeks, for Greeks. So how do these influence the Greek food as well? And the same goes for the past and for influences and definitions even within. For example, bougatsa, the pie in Thessaloniki means savory, something with cheese or meat. In Athens, has completely different meaning and it means something sweet with cream. We will fail to define any national cuisine on these elements, to be honest, in this podcast or in any book if we try. It's a very, very tricky question. This fluidity and elusiveness of traditional cooking is, at least for me, charming and tempting to explore in depth. I'll be back after this short break.
Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermès, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So in the years of patriotic and national hysteria of the 20th century, there was one chef and author who left an indelible mark in the effort to modernize and westernize the Greek cuisine. His name was Nikolaos Tselementes, and his surname was synonymous with the word cookbook itself. Especially in my grandmother's and my mom's generations, they'd open the Tselementes, as they would say, to look for a recipe. They wouldn't say cookbook. He was born in 1878, just a few decades, like 4 decades after the birth of the modern Greek nation-state, and he died in 1958. So as a chef and cookbook author, he is still considered one of the most influential writers of modern Greece, and his specialty was Greek and French cuisine. He was born in the island of Sifnos in Cyclades and grew up in Athens. He studied, of course, abroad in Vienna and so on, and he became manager of a hotel later on. And then in 1930, he published the influential cookbook Cooking and Patisserie Guide in Greek, Οδηγός Μαγειρικής και Ζαχαροπλαστικής. In his words, Greek gastronomy has a clear and straight lineage from ancient Greek cuisine, and all the food we know, with Turkish or Eastern or barbarian names, as he claimed they were, had the ancient Greek equivalent. And he wanted to read the Greek cooking of his period, of his time, from all these barbaric non-Greek elements, as he said. In his thesis, he heralded and christened the French cuisine as the evolution of Greek cuisine. So his use of sauces, for example, and butter and cream and the making of bechamel sauce, and crucially, the expulsion of spices from the dishes, was not only a necessity, but a justified action to bring back the cleanliness of the Greek cuisine and cooking. Which, of course, we can say it's nonsense, really. It's a very nationalistic proposition, to be honest. And with our eyes today, we can see he was talking nonsense. For me, it's not about what makes Greek cuisine different or unique, but what dishes, names and ingredients it has in common with other national dishes and nations and people and cuisines. How this commonality brings us closer together instead of building borders. This is, for me, the wow factor of not only Greek cuisine, but every national cuisine that I explore. And if I can find a definition, that's probably the yaya's cooking, the grandmother's cooking, this nostalgia and the memories of childhood dinners, of family eating together on the table, and the smells and the aromas coming from the saucepans and the kitchen. All these noises and elements and aromas that would flood the house. So all I can say, it's complicated. Food and food identity is, of course, important. But that identity is transactional and complicated. So it's good if we are skeptical of many essentialist stories and soundbites about what is it that defines a particular national cuisine. It's good to recognize that food histories are dynamic and open-ended. So when I moved here in the UK about 24 years ago, I thought I had a clear idea and a very thorough understanding of what is it Greek food and Greek cuisine in general. I suppose it was the arrogance of youth. I grew up eating Greek food all my childhood. We prepared what we call Greek food in the house. But as the years passed and travelled places and met other people too, from other countries and ethnicities, and many people of the neighbouring countries in the Balkans and the Middle East, and made many friends, especially from Turkey, for example, that idea I had about Greek food, somehow it became blurrier and blurrier, murky and fuzzy around the edges. It got a little bit confused and made me question its origins a lot more than I thought possible to question. Of course, does it matter? What defines Greek food, anyway? And this is something that all cuisines have to some extent, right? Very nationalistic in a way, and very much proud of themselves. Either the best cuisine in the world, or so unique, or above all others. And definitely, I suffered from that syndrome when I was growing up, being proud of my food. And the first few years when I moved into the UK, I had the same notions. So what does it mean to you? What does it mean for you when you hear the words of Greek food or Greek cuisine? What are the first things that come to your mind? Without wanting to be too stereotypical, certainly something like moussaka, souvlaki, feta cheese, Greek salad, spanakopita, baklava come to mind. At least to my mind, too. And all this can be eaten part of a full meal as well, from starter to main course and salad and dessert. And yet, the above, with slight variations, perhaps, and maybe different names, or different sounding names, superficially, are dishes and foods that are eaten throughout the Balkans and the Middle East. What does it make it then uniquely Greek? In all honesty, I don't think there is something that can be called strictly Greek. And I don't mean that negatively, I don't mean that everything is stolen or what have you. We can say that we can find a continuity from the ancient world through the Byzantine world and Middle Eastern cuisine to the modern, of course, to the modern Greek cuisine. There are influences there. Vine leaves, olive oil, wine, grapes, fish, feta-style white cheeses from goat and sheep milk. The elements are there. This elemental connection to our ancient past is there, of course. But it connects us, all of us, not just the Greeks. One can understand why national cuisines exist today and national dishes exist. That's not to say nothing claiming a Greek heritage isn't Greek. What I'm trying to say is that we have more in common than things that separate people of Mediterranean background and the Balkans, of course. And to be brutally honest, the concept of a nation with borders and nation states is relatively a very recent phenomenon in our civilization. The way we can define today, this didn't exist perhaps even 400 years ago or even more recently. The food that the Greeks ate in northern Greece, in the western part near Albania, in the mountains, ranges, these Greeks up there, it's not the same food as the Greek Cretans or the Peloponnesians or the inhabitants of Corfu, for example, which were under Italian-Venetian influence for 400 years before they joined Greece, or the Greek Thracians near Bulgaria or Turkey. There isn't, or at least there wasn't, one strict notion of Greek cuisine in the past, in the relatively recent past as well. The rise of the modern Greek nation gave rise to the notion of modern Greek cuisine, as we know it today. Of course, the most successful propaganda and non-Greek thing ever is what we call Greek coffee, which was called until very recently, even in Greece, Turkish coffee. Perhaps, maybe 50 years ago or so, it was still called Turkish coffee. And my grandmother, throughout her living days until she died in 2013, she was calling it Turkish coffee. And this, in every sense, Turkish coffee. It is how this brew, it is how this coffee culture was spread throughout the world from Yemen onwards. They took it, and that went to the Middle East, to the Balkans, and then to Europe and the world. But for some reason, we managed to manipulate the minds of the Western allies and nation peoples and made it called Greek coffee. There's nothing inherently Greek, really, is it? It's more of something that spread throughout the Ottoman Empire, from Egypt to Jordan to Lebanon and all the and Turkey, of course, and the Balkans, and everybody drinks it, and they still drink it. They drink this coffee that way, and they call it either their own nation's coffee, Lebanese, Egyptian, Bulgarian, or they call it Turkish coffee. We drink it the same way. Interesting, to say the least. I remember the hot summer days of my childhood, the brilliant long holidays of summer, when there was no school, and we would play outside all day. Sunday lunch was this brilliant, delicious dish called moussaka, this Moorish dish with layers of aubergines, a summer vegetable, mincemeat and bechamel sauce on the top, baked in the oven, which had a nice crunchy top, but it was still fluffy inside. It was a dish that should be very heavy and non-summery, but it was, for all intents and purposes, the summer definition of a Sunday lunch. A recipe that my mother would make in a sort of magical way, and the dish didn't feel heavy. The end result didn't feel heavy at all. We would eat two pieces. Mum would make it all day, perhaps even start on Saturday night, by frying the aubergines. And of course, every time it was absolutely perfect. We would eat two pieces each, with a salad of tomatoes and onions, and some feta cheese on the side, and maybe a little bread to dip and mop the deep amber and red juices left from the moussaka, from that infusion of the mince meat in the sauce and the aubergines. That memory of childhood food is what Greek food is to me. And yet, how can we claim a dish such as moussaka as purely Greek? Many scholars find the birth of moussaka into the dishes of 10th century Baghdad, minus the bechamel, of course. And can we say that Greek food is the food that is based on Greek agricultural produce? Can that be true for any cuisine as such in the age of globalization, in a time that the world becomes more and more the same? Or perhaps Greek cuisine is part of Greek nature and the Greek climate? Even this is misleading. There isn't the same climate throughout the Greek mainland. There are mountains, there are islands. Crete has a completely different climate from the villages near Bulgaria, with the cold, harsh winters, and Thessaly in the middle of Greece, with its plains. It's a different geography than the mountainous, wild, dry islands. So again, that's something that can mislead us a lot of when we're trying to define a national cuisine. I love this complicated history, because the more you're trying to define and find a meaningful term, the more obstacles get into the way, and the more interesting regional variations of foods and new recipes and new dishes come to light. And that's what excites me. Anyway, I hope I made you think a little bit more about Greek food and cuisine today, and discover a lot more interesting regional recipes. And let me know your thoughts. I've been Thomas Dinas, and this was the Delicious Legacy Podcast. See you soon for another archaeogastronomical adventure.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.